Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
First of all, it's the cost, but next it's actually how you lead or how you get that contact on your drift, because it's so easy to just lead your nymphs or dragging your nymph towards you, because then you obviously have contact, but they're not always drifting in a dead drift, so it's not that natural to the fish. But so I would say both casting and how you actually drift your nymphs.
That was Erlen Nielsen sharing two big Euro nymphing struggles for many fly fishers. Euro nymphing in Norway today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the show. Did you know that you can now leave a rating on Spotify? If you're on Spotify right now, and I believe if you've upgraded to the newest version, click the little three dots, and I believe you can leave us a five-star review if you've been enjoying the show. We'd really appreciate it. Definitely thank you in advance if you're able to do that. Today's episode is sponsored by Deddy Flies. Established in 1928, Deddy Flies is the oldest family-run fly shop in the country, now in their 94th year. Please head over to wetflyswing.com/deddy to grab your in-house flies today. That's wetflyswing.com/deddy, D-E-T-T-E, to support this podcast and the oldest fly shop in the country. We're also sponsored by the Fly Fishing Film Tour. The Fly Fishing Film Tour is back. It's back, baby. Don't miss this year's 2022 F3T as it returns to theaters near you for another fabulous season on the water. Full of rod bending action, unforgettable storytelling from coast to coast, swag, and a whole lot more. Tons of stuff here, including conservation partners. Please head over to wetflyswing.com/F3T to find a show near you. That's wetflyswing.com/F3T. Erlen Nielsen is here all the way from Norway today. Erlen is the rock star of Norway fly fishing and sheds some serious light on putting together his Euro game. We also find out where you should be heading if you want to make a trip to Norway. Obviously, Atlantic salmon is big, so we just touch on that briefly, but there's also some really cool fishing there, including grayling, some really big, big grayling, and of course, brown trout and sea trout. Brown trout or sea trout. So we're going to get into all that with one of the best in Norway today. So without further ado, here is Erlen Nielsen. Let's go. How's it going, Erlen?
Hi, thank you. It's going quite nice, but the winter time is it's cold and dark over here. So
oh yeah,
not too much fishing.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So it's a pretty. So tell us what the winter's like there. First of all, because Norway always seems like one of those places that you would love to live. But what's it like right now?
Actually, I'm quite happy with the place I live, because I live on the west coast, southern west coast of Norway. So we have kind of a mild climate. But right now it's raining like crazy and about 10 degrees Celsius. So we just had our winter, I think, because 1 week ago it was minus and snow on the ground. So, yeah.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah, 10 degrees Celsius. I'm always bad at the conversion, but I think that's somewhere in the like 40 to 52 degree Fahrenheit. So that's kind of like where we're at too. Yeah, it's cold and wet here as well right now. So we're kind of in similar environments, it feels like.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, we're going to dig into today you've been quite a lot. You've won a lot of awards and things like that through the team Norway and Norwegian fly fishing and things like that. We're going to dig into some of that history and everything you have going with Euronymphing, because Euronymphing is a super hot topic always on this show. But bring us back to fly fishing. How did you first get into fly fishing? What was your first memory of that? How did you get into Team Norway?
Yeah, I have a couple of brothers. That's 15 and 16 years older than me. So when I was I was probably around 10 years, they took me on a fishing trip and started fishing with them. And just short time after, one of my brothers got into the competition scene. And he dragged us all in there. So, and I've been competing since 2000. So it makes it 22 years this year.
Wow!
So I've been in there since I was a youth, though. But
22 years. Obviously, yeah, it's a long time. And we've had a few episodes on here on Team USA. You know, Devin Olsen and Lance. You know, some other people that have been. I'm sure you probably know those guys, but. But yeah, it's always interesting to me because it's a whole different perspective on what you do. We're going to talk about that as well a little bit later. But take us to Norway a little bit, because for somebody who hasn't been there, it seems like one of those destinations that everybody should go to. Describe, what do you love about Norway, like as far as from the fishing and environment side?
Norway is a perfect country to fish in. It's, we have a lot of wild fish, not many stockfish areas like in the rest of the Europe, but we have a lot of wild fish and loads of rivers running in every direction, south, north, west, east. So so we have plenty of water, and we do not have that many people in our country. So it's a lot of unpressured water. The fishing is just perfect. And we have also quite good coastal fishing, if you like, sea run browns. That's mainly what I do nowadays. It's like from November to early April, I'm mainly in the coast doing saltwater fishing for sea run browns. So we have a season all year round, but of course in the wintertime it's not much to do. But it's a great country to fish in.
There you go. Yeah, that is, because you have that. And then do you also have... What's the Atlantic salmon gate? Because that's also a really hot target item always. What's that look like there?
The Atlantic salmon in Norway is it's famous for its Atlantic salmon. So we have loads of rivers, but unfortunately, there is a decrease in the popularity of Atlantic salmon. So also a lot of rivers are closed for fishing now. So that's not only a good situation. And It's big industries like fish farms and all that stuff really affecting the fishing.
Yep, that's one of those. And yeah, we're not going to dig into all that on the conservation stuff today, but you know, obviously there's challenges. But the sea run browns, I mean, that is a super popular topic as well. Take us there a little bit on the sea run. What's that look like? Is that because we have, you know, there's some sea run fishing, you know, closer to us as well. You know, we don't have to go to Norway to find them, but it is a popular fishery. What's it like there? Is it pretty easy to find big fish?
We are mostly wade fishing, the bigger fish are going more further from the bank. So you need a boat to get in contact with the real big ones. If you want to get them often, but there are certain times during both fall and spring when they come quite close, and it's an amazing fishing when you hit those big sea runs, because they are so strong and they are so beautiful. So it's an amazing fishing. So we mainly go around wading. I fish a lot of shrimp patterns, because shrimps are all over the shoreline. So. And the sea trout seems to love them. So it's amazing fishing.
There you go. Well, I think sea trout, we might also talk about that a little bit. Today, I wanted to really dig into a little bit of what you do. I'm imagining kind of Euronymphing, obviously, is always a hot topic. And are you still, like right now, are you getting prepared for like competition fly fishing? Is that something? I know COVID obviously has been around the world. Is that something you have going right now?
Yeah, unfortunately... Because of COVID, I missed out a few years, at least international. But we're actually going to have the European Championship hosted in Norway this summer.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. And it's a lot of preparation going on, fly tying, teams meeting, and all that stuff. So, yeah, we are preparing. Hopefully, we're going to do well on our home ground. That's mainly grayling fishing.
Oh, mainly grayling. Okay, so that's cool. So this is mainly a grayling thing. And is it pretty, how popular is the kind of team, I keep wanting to say Team USA, but Team Norway and that there, how popular is it? Because here, the Team USA doesn't get quite, you know, you don't hear as much about it as you do. I'm curious, is it very popular? Does everybody know about what you have going?
No, it's not like in Central Europe where competition fishing is huge and let's see, the team members are fishing stars in their countries. But in Norway, it's probably a lot like U.S. Not a lot of attention, and it's a different culture. It's like people are not used to it yet.
Oh, I see. Yeah, they're not used to it. And you've been doing it for a while. So is it on? So typically, when you're out there fishing, is Euro nymphing kind of nymphing when you're out there? Is that kind of like a majority of the type of fishing? Or are you mixing up a lot of different types, dries, everything else?
I mix up everything. It's like when you're a competitive angler, it's you always strive to be the let's say the complete angler, because you need to do everything. You need to be good at dry fly fishing. You need to be good at streamer fishing. You need to be good at still water fishing. And of course, you need to be good at nymphing. Since the trout and fish in general feed most of the time on subsurface, of course, you need to present the flies there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a lot of nymphing. I would say during a season, it's probably around 50% of the time I'm on the water.
50%, that's right. Well, let's dig into a little bit on the Euro nymphing. We're going to circle back around to some other general stuff later, but let's start with that because Euro nymphing is definitely a super hot topic. Everybody wants to, it seems like it's maybe the easiest way to catch fish out there for, you know, at least trout. And you're talking about grayling, which is awesome too. I love digging into that. But let's take us back to, you know, kind of let's take to the start because I'm not sure if you're doing this differently than kind of how people set up over here. But talk about that a little bit. Do you feel like this is similar to what other people, Euro nymphing setups around the world, around other countries?
Yeah, absolutely. I got my inspiration from the international competition scene. So I think most guys in Europe and probably the world in general is doing more or less the same. It's been developing from for us at least. It's been developing from the Czech style all the way up to where we are now. And in Norway, even though it's 20, yeah, probably more than 20 years ago since the real Czech style was popular, still in Norway, people think about nymphing as Czech style nymphing. But I've seen the videos of Lance and Devin, and we are basically doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, same deal. Okay, and I'll put links in the show notes to those past podcasts we've had with them. So take us back, because it's been a little while since we've done it. Is the Czech style nymphing, how is that different than, say, some of the other types of nymphing? Or is everybody kind of, is Czech style kind of what everybody's doing? I can't really remember exactly.
Czech style is where it kind of begun. And it's a shorter distance. It's more, you're fishing more straight under your rod tip. But I would say that the European nymphing, where it's now, it's a much more effective technique than only the Czech style. Because the Czech style is perfect for grayling, for example. Because the grayling is not that easy spooked. They stay close to your feet, and they even come to you if you're standing in one place long enough. Because
oh wow,
yeah. Because you have insects or nymphs climbing on your waders, and the graylings will come up there. So that kind of
amazing.
That kind of nymphing is quite close to Czech style. But when I go trout fishing, I'm more upstream kind of nymphing with longer drifts and lighter flies.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's cool. So fish are literally coming up. I didn't really know that about grayling. So they're, it's almost like they're a pet. They're kind of coming up right up to you. You can almost touch them.
They are real social and they school up. So if you find one, you find 30. So it's like, yeah, they are quite special. And for me, it's trout first, but grayling can be fun sometimes. But yeah. Yeah, it's at least that's a Scandinavian grayling, because I fish grayling in central parts of Europe, and it's quite different.
Oh, okay.
I remember a guide we had in Slovakia a couple of years ago when we had a world championship there. He said that we caught a lot of grayling, but they were all less than 30 centimeter. So he said that everybody can catch a trout, but if you can catch a grayling over 30 centimeter, then you're a master.
So, no kidding.
So, yeah, that's quite different from the grayling we have here. It's I think we have just such a big popularity of them, so it's a big competition about the food, and that's probably why they act the way they do.
There you go. And I'm just trying to look up. Yeah, I always forget my centimeter thing. So point. Yeah, it's about half an inch. So you're talking 15, yeah, 16, yeah, 17 inches, something like that.
Yeah, correct.
Which is great. Yeah, and I was just talking to somebody. We had somebody. Oh, we were talking about Alaskan. Linda was on recently talking about Alaskan grayling, and she was fishing some areas where they had them up to like 20 inches, which is a pretty good, right? That's a monster grayling.
Yeah, but that's what we have in Norway. We have maybe not 20, but at least
50 centimeter.
50 centimeter, yeah, up to 50 centimeter. We have lots of grayling that size. We have quite big grayling in Norway, but they're kind of easy to catch if you know where they are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've been watching a few of your YouTube videos. I think that's kind of your channel. It's obviously in a different language, and you're doing a great job, speaking English here. But yeah, so on those videos, it's pretty cool, because I was watching some in a different language, and they're still, it's just fishing videos, right? It's kind of funny. They're still cool to watch. Yeah. Okay. So, and what about trout? You mentioned the sea trout, the brown trout. What are the trout species there? Is that the main one?
Yeah, that's it. Every other trout that's in Norway is not native, so we don't have, like I said earlier, it's not a lot of stocked fish, so it's mainly fishing on native browns. And we also have Arctic char, of course, but that's more in the lakes.
Oh wow. Yeah, so Arctic char. Yeah, you have some cool. That's the cool thing about it, is that you do have, I mean, obviously brown trout are all over the world now. Yeah. But yeah, you guys have the native population. So when you guys have this event coming up here, the European Championship, I mean, how does that look to you? Do you feel like, you know, you're going to have a good chance at winning this thing, or is it pretty much, you know, it's going to be just as challenging as if you're fishing in Spain or something like that?
Aye. We have a bigger advantage on our home ground. We know the area quite good. That's a huge difference from when you travel around the world, because let's say I go to Spain, then I'm there probably 1 week prior to the competition, and that's all I get to prepare. Mm-hmm. But now we've actually had competitions in this area the last 4 or 5 years, so we're quite familiar with the place, and I think that's a big advantage, because one of the rivers we're going to fish, actually two sectors, it's the Glomma River. It's the biggest river in Norway. So in there, it's like 200 meters wide on the biggest part. So you need to know where to go. We have dreams and goals of making the podium, but it's going to be real tough. It's going to be real tough. The other teams are strong. And also the Finnish team, which is very familiar with the fishing we have here, because it's similar. They've been strong the last 10 years, and I see them as one of the favorites. Also together with Czech, France, Spain, always. So it's going to be real tough, but I think we have at least one of the biggest chance in a while to get a good position.
There you go. And you have... the people on your team, do you know who's all going to be there with you? And are they all people that have been doing this for 20 years, or is there a good mix of experience?
It's a mix of experience, but I know them well, and it's all very experienced fishermen. And I think this team that we have now is one of the strongest we've had in a while, because it's been a big variation inside the Team Norway the last year. It's been a lot of new ones coming and going, and not really consistent. And I think that's important to make it good. But now we have a real strong team, so hopefully we get it out.
That's cool. Yeah, I remember the story that I think it was either Devin or Lance was talking about when Team USA, you know, back in the day, they started out as just a terror. They weren't very good, and it was more like a bunch of, you know, they were just kind of like picking whoever to come off, and it was more like who wanted to go travel. And then when they really got serious about it and started, you know, obviously making it a serious deal, they got better at it. But yeah, like anything, I mean, it's you're the top of the game, right? I mean, you guys are the best in your country, best in the world. So it takes some preparation. I mean, how much are you fishing? I'm just curious, you know, like throughout the day, throughout the year, are you fishing every day as much as you can? How does that look?
As much as I can. I've had that question several times. So actually a couple of years ago, I just noted every day I went fishing, and I ended up 220 days fishing.
There you go.
That year. So I guess I'm in average around 200 days a year. So quite much. Yeah.
So you're basically a guide, right? Are you, I'm not sure if you guide at all, but is that, that's pretty much what you are. You're kind of a same level of experience, if not more.
I would say so, because when you're also in the international competitions, you get a lot of good friends, good contacts around the world. So you people with extreme experience, and so I would say you get some extra from just being there.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, Togan's Fly Shop, providing superior products at a very affordable price. A very nice resource for fly tying materials, tools, and accessories. Togan's definitely has you covered here. They do a lot of stuff well, including some tutorials. They got some great people doing some good stuff there teaching. Togan's is now offering a fly tying box. This is their mystery box where they select all the materials for you, and you get a nice package right in the mail. It's only one click away, and you can get started right now. I recently made an order through Togan's, and the experience was perfect. After being out on the water and losing a few flies, I had to make a few more purchases of some new hooks and materials, and I did that at the website. You can go to wetflyswing.com/Togan's, and you can take a look at their diverse selection of products today. Head out there, support this podcast by clicking over at that link at Togan's Online. That's wetflyswing.com/TOGENS. Okay, back to the show.
Well, what's the, you mentioned the glama, I think it's, is it G-L-A-M-A, is that how you spell that?
Yeah, just a double M.
Oh yeah, glama, yeah, though I guess there's two, yeah, G-L-O-M-M-A. And is that, so that's one of the bigger rivers there. Where, if people are coming up there to fish from around the world, I mean, are there a bunch of locations? Obviously you have like the Atlantic salmon, but where are people headed? Are there just tons of rivers where people are going, different lodges and things like that?
Yeah, there is a lot of places. We have for grayling, it's glama is very famous. It's long, so you have a lot of places. But glama is very famous from at least in the rest of Europe. Mm-hmm. A lot of people coming there. If you want to fish trout, Hemsedal, it's in the middle of the. It's actually in the mountains in the south. That's very good trout river. And we also have a lot of other good trout rivers just around Hemsedal, just in the middle part of around the mountains.
Okay. And that's I think that's Hemsedal is, I guess we can spell that. I'm just trying to, how do you, is that H-E-M-S-E-D?
That's correct. A-L.
Yeah, A-L.
Hemsedal.
Hempstead.
Yeah.
Okay. And well, let's dig into a little bit on the nymphing, just for take us there for a little bit. And I'm curious, because like on what you use, your gear is probably a little bit different. But talk about kind of back to the basics, rod, reel, line. And I know you mentioned that it's similar to what we do over here. But talk about what you're using there. If you're going out nymphing on, and what is your home river? Like if you're going to go nymphing right now, is there a river nearby where you live?
I have a couple of small creeks in Bergen, but if I want to go to a river, then I will travel to Voss, which is about an hour and a half from here. Mm-hmm. Voss, and we have another river called Exo that's about the same distance. So both those rivers is more or less my home river.
That's it. That's it. And is that, again, I'm trying, sorry to bug you on the I'm just trying to get these down. So it's V-O-S-S, right? Voss?
Yeah. Yeah.
Voss,
and then XO, it's E-K-S-O.
Okay. XO, cool. So you're going there. So let's just say we're going to the Voss, today. Well, probably not today. What is the best time if you're going to go fishing for trout? I guess you're talking. Well, now, are you talking the Voss? Is this grayling or
No, that's brown trout. The closest grayling river I have from my home is 7 hours drive. So now, Voss, it's we have a lot of snow on the mountains around Voss, so it's kind of late. It's in the second half of June, I would say, till throughout September. It's prime time all year, or all that period, because we have good water flow from the snow melt and stable temperatures. So it's a very good period to fish there. It's mainly mid-sized trout, like let's say 30. You get them up to 40 centimeter, but not huge trout. It's just perfect game fish.
That's right. And this one does not have a connection. Do some rivers have a both sea run and native and a resident fish?
Yeah, this river is also. Now I'm fishing on the brown trout stretches more up, but when you get further down, they become salmon and sea trout as well.
Oh,
but
yeah.
There is more difficult to get to get the places.
Oh, okay, yeah, I gotcha. Okay, so. Okay, so let's take us to the water. So we're in the summertime, and we're fishing it. What is the gear? So talk about your rod, reel, line setup. What do you have there for what are you using for a rod?
Yeah, I'm typically using a 10-foot three weight and an 11-foot three weight. That's two rods I'm normally going with. If I'm fishing... let's say I'm fishing shallow parts where I can come close to the fish. I prefer the 10-foot three.
Mm-hmm.
But if I need a longer reach or fishing calmer or flatter areas of the river, then I probably use the 11-foot to get a little bit more distance between me and the trout.
There you go. And give us a brand. What are you using there for brand names?
Yeah, I'm cooperating with Vision, which is a Finnish manufacturer. So I'm using a Vision Nymphmaniac most of the time, and sometimes a Vision Exographene Nymph as well.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, good. I always love to, well, where we can, throw some links in the show notes. And obviously we've heard of that company. And then what about your, talk about your line. What do you got for a line there?
Yeah, I use a level Euronymph line. I'm always looking into Facebook and all those comments around, and I see people say you don't need a Euro line, use backing or use mono or whatever.
Right.
For me, it's never been a question. Not only because it's you have to use a line in competition, of course, but. But anyway, I think the feel when setting the hook, when taking in slack, when playing the fish, everything. I think the feel is much better with a coated line than mono or backing. So yeah, I use a level Euronymph line.
There you go. Yeah, and that's
also Vision.
What? Oh, also Vision. Okay, yeah. So the Vision. What? And yeah. They make. I'm not even sure on their product line. So they have rods line. They kind of have a little bit of everything. Or what do they focus on?
They have a very broad catalog. It's like they have everything. They have everything for salmon fishing, sea trout fishing, pike fishing, trout grayling, nymph dry, whatever. So they have everything. Yeah,
that's right. There's so many, obviously, around the world. There's, I mean, tons of names that always come in. We've had a few companies, I think, near you that have been on this show. And but yeah, I'm hoping to dig into a little bit of that today. So, you know, let's just keep this going on this. So we have the line. And what about a reel? Is that also a Vision reel, or you're fully there?
That is also also a Vision reel, yeah. But yeah. The reel is the most important part with the reel is that it balances your rod properly.
Oh yeah.
And of course that's a little bit of an individual thing how you like it, but I would say that get a little bit of back weight on your rod, so you get a little bit, you get automatically get the top a little bit up, you know. So you don't have to correct yourself all the way. So I think it's important to have a little bit back weight on the rod. So that's what you do with the reel.
That's it. So you think that is really important, getting a little bit more, a little heavier reel to keep the tip kind of coming up. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, depending on, of course, how light the rod are and how well the rod is balanced without the reel. But at least you want you don't want it to be tip heavy, if I can say that.
Yeah.
Because then you lose the sensitivity.
Okay. So... That's right. Yeah, you don't want to be tipped. And the rods obviously are, you know, they're Euro rods, so they're super light yeah. tips. And it's a cool thing. And we have a lot of people that obviously have just started Euro nymphing, some people that are more experienced. So there's always questions on, you know, how do you do it right? Because it's kind of when you first start doing it, it's really a little weird, right? Because it's almost, you don't really have a line to cast. Talk about that a little bit. What are the tips if you're out there? Now, first of all, do you do any guiding?
I do some guiding and I also do some courses in Euro nymphing. So, what I see is actually a big issue is the casting, because it's so different from what you learn in a normal fly cast. So the casting is actually something we spend a lot of time on the water before people get it, you know. So. But it's quite simple, but you just need to think different. It's like you cannot roll cast. You cannot just do small loops, because then your nymphs will hit the rod and you're not fishing the rest of the day. So the casting is actually a bit challenging to get people to get at once.
So is this course material like where people are actually, you have it online, or how's the course material set up?
We're going to have it online soon. We're just going to start doing that. But now it's been physically there in the river with them. And first we have some slideshows and fly tying, and then we go to the river and
That's right. Yeah, because there's a lot too. So, well, let's just take us there for a second. So say I'm heading up there, you know, to fish with you here this summer, spring, summer, and I'm there and we're on this river, you know, and I'm kind of brand new to it. Maybe I've tried to cast a couple times and I've just like had to give up because it was so hard. You know, how do you start me out? What's the first thing you do if I've got the rod in the hand? How the casting thing, how, what do you tell somebody? So if they're really struggling, how do you make the cast?
The easy way is to, I don't know what you call it, maybe you call it water load, I guess.
Oh, yeah, water load, yep.
Yeah, just put the nymphs downstream of you and have that tension, and then just bring them upstream, because then you have the tension in the rod, and it's more natural. The problem is when people are trying to do it in the air, because they're not... patience enough, so they don't let flies get all the way back there before they start the movement towards the fish. So I would say start with the water load, just bring those flies downstream of you and chip them up.
Yeah, so the water load's big, and then you're probably doing some stuff with your other hand to kind of like speed up the haul the line, that sort of thing. Or what other tips would you give somebody? So they got the water load, and how far can you cast, and how can you shoot a further cast? Or are you trying to stay within you know, pretty close to you?
Yeah, I you try to stay within 6-7 meters because you will have some trouble taking up that slack and get contact with the flies if it's too long. Mm-hmm. So 6-7 meters is the maximum cost, I would say.
That's it. So maximum, you don't go longer than like 6 or 7 meters ever, Roy.
I do it sometimes, but I don't take people out and say they should do that first. I think it's smart to start short and then get comfortable with it before you start doing longer drifts. But mainly, if you have a drift up to 8 or 9 meters, then you're going to struggle even though you are experienced.
Yeah. That's right. Okay, so that's good to know. So, and that's roughly 6-7. That's like 20 feet. So a good short cast. And are you, when you're doing this, are you typically, well, back to the Voss, if we're on that river, how are you covering water? How are you reading the water? If we were there again, I'm there with you. If you're at a new location, you know, where do you start out, like covering the water when you say, okay, I'm going to find fish here?
Yeah, that's always different. But what I always say is to look for variation of some kind. Sometimes you have structure on the bottom that's breaking the current, and that's of course in those seams. It's a natural place for a fish to be. But always look for some kind of variation. If it's small.
Like a break or like a anything, any structure, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. And the best is if you know if it's brown trout or grayling, because then you need to do or search them up in a different way. But if it's brown trout, always fish the margins, the close to the bank, the low of the bank. If it's grayling, okay, wait to your hips.
Okay. There you go, Roy. So you gotta get deep.
Yeah, especially in the bigger rivers. But of course, in the shallow rivers, they always stand anywhere they can stand. But if you're searching for grayling in a bigger river, just wade hip deep and see if you find them there.
Huh. And that's because they're just in deeper water for the most part.
They really like to stay close to the main current. That's one of the things with grayling. They really like the main current, opposite of brown trout, who mainly tries to avoid the main current and rather stay in the calmer water. It's quite different with those two.
There you go. Yeah, it's definitely two different species. So
yeah.
Okay, So we're on the water and we're fishing near the bank. Let's just take it to the brown trout. So we're fishing near the bank. And leader-wise, it sounds like you're probably pretty similar to what we've talked about here before, just long. How long typically is your leader set up?
My leader setup is typically around 17 to 20 foot. It's, yeah. That's, of course, some variations, a little bit shorter when grayling fishing and as long as you can when trout fishing.
Right. As short as you can. So when, how is it different between trout and grayling?
Because the grayling is normally closer to you. So you don't need, and when you're taking the fish back to you, it's, if you get into that thin, leader material in your hand, it's more difficult to get him in. So that's why I like the line, because I can, play the fish, or fight the fish while holding in the line. So, that's mainly because, you don't need to do those long drifts with grayling. So your leader don't need to be that long either.
Yep, exactly. What about flies? Take us to the flies a little bit. So what are your, you know, if you're out there nymphing, give us a couple of patterns that you're kind of going to typically out there.
Typically, I think the pattern is never the most important. The most important will always be to how you bring the fly to the fish. But I have a rule that if you have one dark nymph, one light colored nymph, and one attraction nymph, then you have the basics, and you just need those in different sizes and different bead
and weights,
colors. Yeah. So let's say the pheasant tail is probably my most important nymph. I of course have it in in different variations, like different colors and all that. But the pheasant tail will never get too old. Of course, the hair's here as well. So then I have a dark nymph, and then I have a lighter nymph. So and I have a couple of tag nymphs. Can be anything. It's like you have the red tags. You have the all kinds of variations, but I think it's important to have those three as a basic, like one dark, one light, and one attraction.
That's a good tip. So when you cast, let's say you're casting upstream towards along the bank for some of those trout, and you have those three flies, talk about how you're fishing that. So you get down there, just bring us there. How are you getting that down to the fish and knowing you're at the right distant level?
Yeah, of course, depending on the water flow. Let's say in my typical rivers, I would fish two flies just to cover two different depths, because some places it's the trout stay on the bottom, but other places they stand probably 30 centimeter over the bottom. So if you have one fly hitting the bottom or too low, it's nice to have that dropper fly that's actually in the path of the fish. So typically I'm fishing two nymphs, casting upstream, never let the line land on the water, only the flies, and keep that indicator close to the surface. It's like, you guys call it cider, I guess.
Yeah, cider.
Yeah, we call it indicator.
Oh, you do. There you go. Because indicators aren't allowed, right, in the competition?
No, you can use indicator fly, of course. You can use a bung, which also is a fly. But we like to keep. We use the mono indicator, just like your ciders.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. I don't know why it's called different, but in Europe we normally call it indicator.
Indicator.
So keep that close to the surface, and always keep in contact, or at least try to keep in contact with your flies without dragging too much, because mm-hmm. if you start dragging the flies, they will not come in a dead drift.
Like dragging them on the bottom?
Yeah, or dragging them towards you.
Right.
Yeah, so just try to keep that contact without dragging, and then you will hook that fish, hopefully.
One more quick word from a super, super duper sponsor, Trestle. The CRC system from Trestle provides secure, convenient storage for your fully rigged fly rods with unsurpassed gear protection. The CRC system is pretty cool. It comes with a very easy mounting system. It secures right to your vehicle, to your rack, whatever you have there. There's a reel compartment that's actually flipped around, so your reel's right up, which actually protects them more. This thing is bomber. You can bomb down a gravel road and not have to worry about your rods on top of the car. So this is just makes it easier to have things ready to go. Obviously, having your rods rigged and ready to go makes it easier just to like get off work. There you go. They're on top of your car. You don't have to rig them up. And you can actually, this is fully, if you want to have it the full length, you can have your rod ready to go. So no breaking it down or any of that stuff, which is cool. I remember I had a pickup at one time that had the window in the middle, which was always pretty handy. I'd leave my rod fully rigged and they would slip through there, and it actually worked out really well. Now I don't have that option, so having this rod carrier is actually really nice. If you have a car that's not a pickup, your chance of getting a rod fully rigged in your car is slim to none. So this is a way to do it. The CRC system actually has the flip-up compartment, actually allows you for hatchbacks. It makes it easier if you're securing on a hatchback. There's definitely a ton of stuff here. I'm kind of chopping this one up, and I'm not doing a good job. So I'm going to just let Trestle take over here. Head over to Trestle. That's wetflyswing.com/Trestle, T-R-X-S-T-L-E, to get started right now. And you will support Trestle, this podcast, and a whole bunch of excited people if you click over to that link right now. Check it out. Okay, back to the show.
That's the amazing thing about the Euro nymphing stuff is that it actually, you know, is pretty simple, really. You know, it's, and I've done a lot of a similar type of fishing, not necessarily Euro, but it's more the cast. I think once you get the cast, do you feel like, what do you feel like is the hardest thing for the Euro nymphing for people that are getting into it to get to become good or become really good at it?
First of all, it's the cast, but next, it's actually how you lead or how you get that contact on your drift, because it's so easy to just lead your nymphs or dragging your nymph towards you, because then you obviously have contact, but they're not always drifting in a dead drift, so it's not that natural to the fish. But so I would say both casting and how you actually drift your nymphs.
How you drift. What is the tip there on how do you keep from dragging it? Because depending on the current, obviously, the currents could be doing crazy things. How do you keep from doing that?
First of all, you need to find the right weight. You need to find a weight that don't just hit the bottom. So you need to drag. So you want to find that weight that goes down, but don't...
Yeah, too fast or too much.
Yeah. So that's the first one. And second, I think it's just, it depends on how many hours you have with a rod in your hand, because it's just a feeling, kind of.
Yeah, it's a feeling. So, and that's part of this thing is that knowing, you know, you have so many weights, right? You have maybe three different beads or for each fly and different color. I mean, what is your fly box? Take us to that a little bit. What does your box look like? Does it have just how many different types of sizes of each fly and colors and all that do you have?
I have three different bead size normally in one pattern, and I have it all the way from size 12 to 18 and some in 20 as well. So it gets a lot of your boxes will fill up quite fast. It's but you need to have it, because there is always one situation where you wanted one in 16 with a 2.8 or 2.5 millimeter, and it's always the other situation where you want one in 16 but should have been 3.5 millimeters. So so you need that you need that spectra,
that variation. So you have a good diversity. And then, like on, you said the pheasant tail, you might have different hot spot or different coloration on the thorax.
Basically, and some with the CDC collar.
Oh yeah.
To make them more lively, and so it's all small things, but your boxes get packed.
That's right. Sure. All right. Now, are you tied? Do you enjoy tying flies? Tying up all those flies?
The true answer would be no, because it's like a production, you know. When you go and prepare for a competition, at least an international competition, it's just mayhem. You need to sit down, tie those 200 flies, and then tie the other 200 flies, and it's not fun, but it's real nice when you have it, so you can just go to the river and know that now I got it. So
you wouldn't necessarily go out there and find somebody and be like, hey, can you tie me 200 of these flies? You have to do it yourself?
Yeah, I could, but in that way, I like to do it myself, because then I know what it is. Of course, I bought some flies from some guides when we were traveling to different world championships, and they tie great flies. So, so no problem, but it's something with this. It's a part of the preparation, even though it's not so fun. It's like, when you do it yourself, you feel like you're preparing.
Yeah, no, we just recently had a production, like a full-time tire on Nick Pianessa, and he was talking about, he's tying, thousands of flies, right?
Yeah.
And he was talking about, I was asking him that, like, how does he keep from getting bored or whatever? But he listens to a lot of books on tape, and I was kind of telling, man, you got to get into podcasting. You know, you got to listen to podcasts. There's a lot of good. How's that going? From you, do you have any podcasts out there in your neck of the woods or anything you listen to?
I listen to everything, and I put on YouTube videos, even though I cannot see them. I can at least hear some fishing. So I use all those tricks just to get through it.
Yeah. And your channel is, so your YouTube channel, and I know if we were to go there, it's obviously in, you know, Norwegian, so it's a different different language. But what would, describe that channel a little bit for us. Like, what would somebody, if they were to click over there and watch some of what you do, how do you guys cover it? Or what are you covering there?
Yeah, it's just a startup. We just started up a new business now called Vague. And mainly we just try to show fly fishing. And first we're going to try to show it to the Norwegian audience because there is a lot of fishing techniques out there and a lot of different types of fishing in general that that the Norwegian audience is not familiar with. So we just try to show all the cool stuff you can do with a fly rod in your hand, and basically of course with trout in focus. So we've done so far we've done 6 episodes. All those episodes is actually with English subtitles. So even though it's in Norwegian, you can see it. I don't know if the grammar is correct in all sentences,
but that's okay.
But still, we try.
Yeah, so, that's good.
Yeah. So first of all, we're gonna do this for the Norwegian and Scandinavian audience, and hopefully take it more international. Maybe next year. Yeah.
And how do you spell that again?
V-E-I-G.
Yeah, I-G, yeah. Good. Yeah. So, yeah, and I didn't notice. I think I might have been on a different video because I didn't see the subtitles. So that's good. And yeah, I know the struggle. We transcribe this whole episode. So as we're talking here, we have a service we pay to transcribe it, and it's in the blog post, so you can go read every word we're talking about right now. But it's not we don't go into detail. It's about 95% correct, so there's some errors, but that's kind of having that more than having nothing, right, is helpful. So I think that's good thing. Do that. Okay. Well, we've kind of dug into a little bit. I feel like we have a little taste. Anything else you want to shed light on here about what you do, kind of fishing in Norway or anything else before we start to head out of here?
Yeah, and I'm just really happy that, or hopefully, that we are able to compete international again. So it's going to be the European this year and then the World Championship in September in Spain. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to that. See good old friends. See Lance and Devin again. That's been a few years. So and all those guys. It's I really look forward to it. So yeah, hopefully this COVID stuff is it's going the right way.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally. We're all ready for it to be heading away from us. We're going to keep our fingers crossed and hopefully you guys can get out there again. But when is this, when is the European competition? When is that set for this year?
If I'm not wrong, it's the 4th of July to 12th of July. Yeah. So it's midsummer and should be great.
Yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. And give us a, let's do the, we got a little segment here, Ask a Pro segment. We also call this coffee talk sometime if it's in the morning, but we had a question from Phil in the Facebook group, and this kind of goes in line with what we were talking about on flies, but he said, he wanted to know what your favorite color of tungsten bead is, and maybe some tips on kind of tying with weight, or maybe let's start there. What is your favorite color? Do you have one you love to use?
Yeah, I have the copper. Copper bead is probably the one I use the most. Next after that will be actually black nickel.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then, of course, you have all those crazy colors working.
Yeah.
But you should have it all. But the ones I've used or use more is copper or black nickel.
Copper, black. And then what about your, if you talk about your hotspot bead color, what would that be, your first one?
Hotspot metallic orange, actually.
Oh, orange.
Yeah. But not painted. It should be metallic, not painted.
Oh, not painted, right. So these things, and that's because just so it doesn't like chip or something like that?
They're still cheap, but I don't know. I've tried it now for a few years, and it seems like the trout, they really love it. It's like one of my favorite attractor nymphs is with that bead, and it's working like crazy.
Oh, wow. There you go. And would you put that on your setup? Where are you putting that? Is that on your dropper or on your lead fly?
Normally on my dropper, yeah.
Yeah, on your dropper. There you go. Which would be, how far up above your lead fly would that be?
I'm not sure in inches, but that would be around 65, 70 centimeters from my point fly.
65, 70, yeah. I think, I want to say that's, yeah, it's kind of half, so that roughly, yeah, 30, so yeah. almost 3 feet. Two, 3 feet. Okay.
Yeah, a little bit more. Not 3 feet. Yeah, between 2 and 3 feet. Yeah.
2 and 3 feet. Okay. Yeah. All right. Perfect. And what about, you know, when you're tying those? Anything to know about? I mean, are you just pretty much, I guess, hooks and beads? Well, let's just quickly talk there. What are you using on hooks and beads? What type are you using?
I use for the competition flies. I use Hanak, Czech brand.
Yep.
Yeah. I love the 470 barbless hook. It's just a very good hook. And since I use Hanak hooks, I also use the Hanak heads, because then I know there will never be any conflict.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, they're definitely obviously a big name out there. That's good stuff. Okay, and we haven't talked much today about anything. We focus a little bit on Euro. But you said 50% is other, when you're fishing out there in competition. What other are you kind of mixing that between? Is that mostly like a dry fly sort of thing?
Yeah, and dry fly, dry dropper.
Yeah.
Sometimes streamer, but not that much streamer fishing, really. But dry fly is a very important thing, at least on the brown trout. They are normally quite happy to come up. And when I fish a dry fly, I normally fish it single. So
yeah,
then I have the best drifts. And but also when I said 50%, I was counting also all the still water fishing. That's huge as well.
Oh, do you guys have lots of still water fishing up there?
Yeah, we have lakes everywhere.
There you go. That's cool.
so it's a lot of still water fishing, and I really love it. So yeah.
Yep, so do we. That's one of those things. It's still water. You know, we always, it's just like today we were talking about what we were going to talk about, you know, and we could have spent an hour on still water easily.
Yeah.
And maybe we can. Maybe we'll follow up with you and get you on, you know, down the line. We'll talk still water. Who else, you know, would you recommend if other, you know, other people out there that are in, you know, kind of around your neck of the woods that are kind of big names like yourself that would be good guests? Anybody else we should be checking out?
Absolutely. There is a couple of brothers that that are doing a lot of salmon and also sea trout fishing, mainly from mainly river fishing. I think you should check them out. They have a website called seerun.no.
Okay.
So you should check them out.
There you go. Seerun.no. Awesome. And then what about somebody talking lake or stillwater? Who would be that person?
In Norway?
Yeah.
Me.
Oh, you are? So you're the stillwater guru too. So are you more the stillwater guru, or are you more the Euro nymphing guru?
No, I would say both, because there is not a lot of people come that far in either one of the
in your area.
In either one of the things. So, yeah. I would say, but if you want a real stillwater man to talk to, you should talk to Ian Barr in the UK.
Okay. Ian Barr. That's Ian Barr.
Yeah.
I think I've heard of Ian, so I'll put a link out to him as well.
Yeah, former world champion. And it's just an amazing stillwater angler.
Gotcha. Okay. And what about give us a lodge, a shout out to a lodge. Do you know any good ones over there if somebody wanted to come, whether that was sea trout or Atlantic salmon? Are there any that stick out? Like, or right, if somebody was going to go, say they want to travel, there's different ways to do it, right? You could just travel to Norway and go find some like DIY stuff. But are there quite a few? You mentioned there's some lodges out there, right?
Mainly there are, the lodges is connected with the salmon fishing.
Yeah, so it's all salmon. Yep.
It's not that much in trout fishing, but there is actually an American guy running one camp in a place called Rena. It's R-E-N-A.
Okay.
I think his name is John Bond or something.
Oh, okay.
Wrong. But yeah, so that's one of the places at least.
Perfect. Yeah, that's good. Just give us some links because we're gonna try to follow up with you and dig a little more into this. And you know, and Norway is one of those places. I think, yeah, Atlantic salmon gets a lot of love, but it sounds like Norway is just one of those places we should all visit before we die, right? It's what are your on your bucket list, like around the world? It sounds like you've traveled a little bit, but if you had to go to one place before you head out, where would that be?
One place I haven't been yet.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Then I guess it would be Argentina. Actually, because I haven't experienced it, and I really want to. There's a lot of things there. It looks interesting. Like, of course, the sea trout in Rio Grande looks perfect, mm-hmm. but also, for example, the Jurassic Lake and it looks phenomenal. So that I really want to do. But of course, I really want to come back to Colorado and the United States as well, because that was some fishing I really, really enjoyed.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you were out here a while back, or before COVID, I guess.
Yeah, before COVID. It was during the World Championship in Vail.
Oh, yeah.
2016, I guess it was.
How was that for you? Was that a challenging trip to, like, fishing-wise out here?
Fishing wise, it was not too challenging, because it was quite similar to the rivers I fish in Norway, actually. But the climate was different. Some of the insects was, of course, different. But the rivers was quite, let's say, easy to get to know, because they were so similar to our rivers. So, but the scenery. Everything. It was just an amazing experience being there, and nice people as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Colorado is one of the hot spots for fishing. Fly shops and just fly fishing. It's a killer place. So
yeah.
Okay. And what about? I always love to hear about kind of a resource. You know, obviously you're a huge resource. You've got all this, but who else out there would you recommend in your area? If somebody wanted to learn more about kind of the Euroniffing, are there a bunch of resources, or is it sounds like it? Maybe there's not a huge community out there for people teaching this or guiding that sort of stuff.
No, in Norway or Scandinavia, it's really not too many. To be honest, it's basically a competition thing, and some people is specialized in it, but. It's not that huge here, because and we try to do something with that, though. It's gonna be different in a couple of years. It's one of the plans of our company now to open up this stuff and make people want to do it more.
That's right. So fly fishing wise, it's not still, well, anywhere fly fishing is a small little niche, you know, because it's a small group, but what are people in Norway? So now I'm coming to Norway, but I'm not going there to fly fish. What are people coming there to do in Norway?
It's a lot of hiking.
Uh-huh.
Hiking in the mountains. I guess that's basically why they're here, and just seeing the sceneries and all that stuff. That's the main thing people are doing. Just experience the scenery and I don't know. I don't know why they don't fish. It's a strange thing. I never go anywhere without fishing. So,
yeah, that's right.
So I cannot relate.
Yeah, you always have your gear in the car. Well, I'm curious. This is just on a random note. I was talking to somebody. We were talking about what cars, people are driving. We've got Toyota is a big. A lot of our listeners have Toyotas. I'm curious. What's the perfect vehicle there for your like outdoor? Kind of fishing rig. What are people driving?
I guess I would say Toyota, yeah. I don't have a Toyota myself, but I would like one. The Land Cruiser would be perfect.
Oh, the Land Cruiser. Yeah, those are awesome. That's right. Yeah, the problem with Land Cruisers, they're like whatever they cost, they're ridiculously high priced, right? The Land Cruiser, but even the old ones, even the old Land Cruisers here are super crazy expensive, which is but yeah, Toyotas are a popular. I guess anywhere in the world, Toyotas are going to be a popular vehicle, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Erlend. Well, this has been fun for me. Give us a shout out in the next kind of year or whatever that you have. Anything new you want to give other than the competition? Anything new coming for you? You want to give a heads up on?
No. It's like yeah. Please follow our Instagram on Veg.
Okay, Instagram.
Yeah, that would be nice for us because, as I said, we like to do a more or get to a bigger international audience in the time, and that's the plan. But
perfect.
You have to deal with some Norwegian the first couple of months at least.
yeah, we'll do it. And what's your Instagram?
Veg.no.
Oh yeah, same thing. Veg.
Yeah. So please follow that and. Hopefully we're going to do a lot of fun stuff in the future from production of fly fishing movies and of course the courses both online and physically. Yeah
I love it. I love that you guys are going doubling down on the courses and the teaching and all that stuff, so good deal. All right, well, thanks again for taking all the time today. This has been fun to dig into it with you and get a little perspective on another great part of the world, and I'll check back with you here maybe we can get you on and talk Stillwater on the next time. So thanks, Erlend, appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was fun.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all links, and everything else we covered today, head over to wetflyswing.com/286. 286. 286. Before we head out of here, I want you to head over to wetflyswing.com/... I was going to say Spotify, but I don't think we have that link. How about we just head over to Spotify right now? If you're listening on Spotify, that makes it very easy. There should be three dots if you click over there, and those three dots should... if things are set up right, allow you to leave a rating. A 5-star rating would be super helpful. It would show others that this is a good show, and it'll help us find new people, which helps more people stick around in fly fishing, and I believe creates a better world. That's my take on it. So thanks again, and thank you for supporting the show and for listening. Hope to catch you online on the river. Send me an email. Reply back to the email if you're on our list. On our newsletter, let me know. I would love to hear from you. Thanks again. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.